You people have been chosen to reveal our existence to the world. You will witness what happens here today, and you will tell of it later. All eyes to the front.
You are listening to the Geeks for the Win podcast.
Hi, my name is Mark. My gamertag and PSN ID are the Prophet 209.
My name is William. My gamertag is Poetic Soul 444.
My name is Stuart, and I'm known across the internets as Casual Terror.
And I'm... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm Matt, also known throughout the internets as Patriot 1030.
Right. And we're introducing to you the podcast known as Geeks for the Win. Today, Matt's going to be our guest, and we're going to talk about a little bit of Dexter, Batman animated series, and wherever it goes from there. All right, guys. So all of us have seen all of Dexter now, right?
Yes.
I'm almost caught up to season... I have to see season 4. I didn't get to see it when it was on Showtime, so I'm waiting for the DVDs, but it's okay if you can... I kind of have an idea of what's going on.
No, we can't talk about the ending. No. That's
no,
the thing.
Right,
you haven't seen it? No.
I just saw it last night.
And we'll talk with you after the air on number 4, and we'll talk about 4 another time, but... And we won't do that to you, Matt. We can't spoil the whole. It's too gripping of an end for it to be spoiled like that for you.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
No problem.
But I have seen up through season 3. So.
All right. Well, we'll talk about up to season 3 and stop. Did you see any of season 4?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, we'll talk up to season 3, and then you know what we can do? We can talk about where we think it's going to go for season 5. We'll just skip season 4 and talk about the direction they might take for season 5. Because at least I know you at least know the characters in season 4.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, first of all, I mean, where do you guys rank Dexter as a show?
It's one of my all-time favorites now.
Yeah.
I saw it. You know, in the Movies You'll Love section at Netflix, so I just picked it up on Instant Watch, and I absolutely loved it.
That was the same with me.
Yeah, same for me, too. I'd heard some people talking about it, and then I kind of picked it up. I always thought, well, you know, can I really support a character that's a serial killer? You know, maybe, is that really my moral fiber?
Yeah, that's...
And it turns out, yes, you can.
Yeah, when I first heard about the series, I was like, man, it's a killer about killing people. Hey, this is a killer that kills other killers. So I was like, man, it's perfect. I'm all in. And from the first episode of season 1, I got it when it came out on DVD, the first one. So I watched the whole thing in one sitting. Back to back, my wife sat there with me and watched every one of them with me. So we took a nap, I woke up Sunday morning and finished it. and then, you know, season 2 had just started by then. We called up cable companies, said, okay, give us Showtime. And we were stuck from there. Season 3 was kind of, to me, I didn't like season 3 that much. But we'll get into that when we get into season 3. But, so let's get into Dexter. Dexter's a forensic blood splatter expert that was raised by his father, Harry, and on his code. What do you think about this code, and what does the code represent?
Well, I think having Harry seen everything, you know, seen kids like that and, you know, what it can do to them as they grow up, you know, he understands that, well, he's never really going to be, you know, cured through, you know, through intensive therapy or anything. So it's kind of, you know, you really can't say killing for good, but it's kind of like, you know, kind of like kind of like an outlaw or like a Batman complex, you know, operating outside the law, you know, for the benefit of society, even though they can't do it. Even though society doesn't want to do these things, he can be that person that does those things.
And he was a classic version of necessary evil, right? What do you think? What do you think about it, Stuart?
I mean, it goes to show, you know, with, you know, Dexter's brother, how in season one, the way his brother went, just shows how much that Harry's code really kind of shaped him for good a little bit.
Right. The whole introduction of the Brian character, you know, his brother that he never grew up with, showed what Dexter would have became without the code.
Right, yeah.
And what about you, William?
I think the code, I think Matt was right, you know, it seems like Batman, but just taken to the next level, you know? I mean, Batman never really killed anybody, so I mean, and Dexter, that's what Dexter does. And I think it was also just to save, you know, to save Dexter from, you know, getting caught, or, I mean, part of the code was finding a cover, you know, and he found that with Rita and the kids, and I think maybe that was in the plan for Harry that Dexter didn't even see. I mean, because Dexter started to change when he, you know, met Rita and the kids and started hanging out with them. He started to slowly change.
Yeah.
I think another thing that the code was brought of to me is that Harry, since he was getting ready to die because of his disease that he had, he was kind of bitter. Harry's bitter that a lot of people got away because the justice system was just too black and white. And, you know, seeing that Dexter was as disturbed as he was, decided, like, listen, I'm going to teach you how to live in the gray. With my cop experience, with what I know as a father, as a person, you do this, you do this, you don't do that. You don't kill innocent people. You try to blend in. You know, I'm going to teach you how cops think so that you can always be one step ahead.
Well, I'm going to... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think the justice system is more of the gray as opposed to the black and white, and Dexter lives in the black and white. You know, he'll only stalk and then end up killing somebody that has done something black and white wrong. You know, child molesters, rapists, you know, just horrible people. You know, that the justice system, you know, for whatever cause it is, either, you know, through the fault of a jury, through the fault of a loophole, you know, whatever, you know, legal loophole, whatever that may be, you know, he'll go out and take care of and take out society's trash that they don't want, that they can't take out.
Well, any other things on Harry and his code for now?
I did like how, you know, Harry did kind of show up through, you know, season four, really. You know, the way he does,
Right, it's like, especially later in the series, after he became, you know, let down his emotional guard when he got involved with Rita, you know, Harry kind of went away for a while. But every time he started to question himself, Harry's right there to kind of, you know, sometimes it was to give him advice, other times to antagonize him for going away from the code.
Yeah.
But some way or another, he became like that, you know, that little angel on his shoulder to, like, okay, to kind of direct him or point out his mistakes or point out where he should be going.
Well, see, you know, Dexter talks about, you know, his dark passenger, and I think that actually is represented by Harry. Harry is the dark passenger. Like, that really became apparent in, you know, season four. I'm not really going to talk about it, but it really does.
I think to a point that I didn't really look at it like that too much, but it could be because as he found out that his father wasn't perfect, at first that messed him up a lot, you know? And then he realized, like, listen, whatever, I'm messed up. I'm not going to judge. Whereas his sister was like, to find out her father wasn't perfect, that she had he might have been having affairs and everything. That really was starting to bother her way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Way different. But, you know, I think we're starting to get a little into season four, so we'll backtrack now.
Yeah, but speaking of his sister, I can't stand her. I can't stand Deborah personally.
Now, is that just because of after season 4? Because I love her character.
No, I mean, throughout the whole thing, I just can't. I don't know why. I
think she's probably the worst actor on the, of them all. She's that to me sticks out easily.
I guess it's just
a good actor.
Yeah, that's the thing I just don't like too much is the cursing all the time.
I don't mind. To me, it just matters that she can't act. She doesn't have any range. When she's sad, it doesn't even seem like she's sad. She's just still angry. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, when she's sad, it's shit, fuck. I mean.
Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead. No, you guys go ahead.
No, we want your opinion, what you were saying.
Well, I don't know. I think she's just, she was raised in a man's world. You know, her father being a cop and, you know, she idolizing that and, you know, really, you know, making that her life's goal to always try to make her father proud and, you know, be that kind of, you know, be a very, you know, a very noble person because that's what she saw her father as. And she's always trying to, it seems like she's always having that, that goal to try to, you know, make herself proud and make her father proud or his memory. And it's like, and she has that, it's almost like a stereotype of a cop's mentality where, you know, they're not going to emote. They're not going to, you know, they're going to be very closed off and very, very personal and they're not going to share their emotions. And I think that makes her a very, I think it makes her a compelling character. I think she's more almost like half comic relief and also half, you know, that noble, you know, that noble cause just like Angel is. You know, he's a very good cop, and that's what he does first. He's a noble cop.
I mean, just part of her character is that she's just the type of individual that's going to try too hard. And so everything she's going to do, she's just going to put 150% into it. And, you know, that's why she's like always... She's not going to miss. When she wants to express herself, she's going to express herself with the strongest words. When she likes you, she's going to come on to you strong. If she doesn't like you, she's going to curse you out. And that's just her character. And, I mean, Harry just raised her to keep that kind of shell and that kind of intensity to get what she wants. And she just following it to a T.
Mm-hmm.
What else is going to go on? So, on the other characters, you mentioned Angel. How do you guys like Angel, Baptista, or as another podcaster? Davy B lookalike. I swear that guy can play his front door. I mean, if you look at his
I never thought about that, but yeah, you're right. He just looks a lot like him.
Except that he has hair. I mean, geez. I think his character is he's changed a lot from the first season to up to season 3. In season 1, he was like, you know, self-pity, I don't get to see my kids, I love my wife. I mean, by the time he got to season 3, he was a much more powerful character by the time he got to season 3, because he was actually looking to try to get ahead and establish himself, much like Rita, but not as passionately vulgar about it. He would do it, but he wants to kind of keep it on the low that he's, I'm trying to get better, you know, be a better person. Almost like, to me, it's almost like a parallel to Dexter, but being a good guy. He's just like, he's the absolute version of a good guy in this series. He tries to do everything by the book. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to be in the gray with anything. He'd rather it all be out in the open before he sits there where Dexter's completely... you know, reclusive and in the dark.
Yeah. Right. I mean, he's like Dexter, but he's going to follow the law. He's like, you know, the Batman analogy. He's like Commissioner Gordon. You know, he's going to follow things by the book. And he's going to use the legal system. He's going to use, you know, his police work and his integrity to his advantage.
That's a good comparison. Wow.
Yeah, it is.
Well, what's your take on him, William?
I basically just feel the same, you know. I mean, now that Matt's made the Commissioner Gordon, you know, reference, that really seems to, you know, be true.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah. And we'll get into Commissioner Gordon later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way, yeah.
What do you guys think about, didn't Jennifer Carpenter marry Michael C. Hall in real life, right?
Yes.
That's strange. I wonder how that is, because, I mean, both of them have some intense love interest throughout the season, but not them.
You've gone quiet.
Yeah, you kind of faded there. Sorry.
Hello? Hear me?
It's better.
Yeah, I don't know that. You know the guy that plays Harry, James Remar?
Yeah.
You know, he's done so much work.
I remember, when I recognized, it took me a minute to recognize him. I had only seen him before in Too Fast, Too Furious, and I'm like, oh my god, he's a Miami cop again?
Hey. No, I was looking at the wiki on him, and I see that he was even, I mean, somebody, who was talking about Blade Trinity? He's in Blade Trinity. He's in Sex and the City for a little while. He played Raiden in Mortal Kombat, the second one, the one I don't think nobody's seen. I guess he does a voice in Justice League Unlimited.
This is the guy who plays Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's also been in Batman stuff. He's been Two-Face.
Really? I didn't know that. That was Stark. I know he does a lot of video game and voice acting for stuff, but...
That's right, he was in... Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, is he in Battlestar Galactica? I mean, jeez. This guy has a big body of work. Every time I turn around, I say, hey, that's the guy from Dexter. That just shows you how powerful the show is. Every time I see one of these characters any place, I was like, hey, he's in Dexter. I saw Dokes in episode of Burn Notice. And those characters are so strong that they stick to me as that character. I would never even know their name anymore. Only Michael C. Hall is probably the only name I really know because, you know, he's just so big with the show. But I see these characters carry over to the other show. So it just shows you how strong the show is. Well, let's get into season one a little bit more now. The ice truck killer introducing Dexter. And the whole Rita love affair. How do you guys think they did with it for a first season?
I think it seemed. Boy, you got someone. Go ahead. I want to collect my thoughts on it.
I mean, I think it was a good way to introduce. I mean, a lot of key characters that that would be important throughout the series, not just that season. But like you mentioned, Dokes, I mean, that was a big part of season two. And
well, I mean, I think from the very beginning, they wanted to establish that Dokes just did not, something about, his intuition on Dexter was dead on. It's like, something about you I do not like. And you're too good with this blood splatter shit to be sitting up here. You know, you're too cagey. You're never around when things really need to be solved. Something's not right with you. So, you know, that started the whole, rivalry between those two. And then, throughout the rest of it, they start getting into LaGuardia's character and how she was kind of power hungry. And she was stepping on people. And slowly they went ahead and started to show you that, connection between LaGuardia and, I'm butchering her name, LaGuardia and Dokes, right?
Yeah.
And then, very, very beginning of the show, they started showing the ice truck killer. We didn't have no idea who he was. And I think the reveal of the ice truck killer was, at first, he's leaving all these clues, and they make a point to show you that he's actually messing with Dexter.
Yeah.
By the way he's setting up everything.
And it was just, it was just brilliant, the fact that he ended up around Dexter without Dexter even knowing. I mean, he was dating Deborah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The whole setup for the fact, we watch a lot, all of us watch a lot of TV and all these movies. And there was no way I was going to guess that this guy that was a doctor that was dating Deborah was a damn killer.
I remember, like, it might have been the second or third time I've seen him that he struck something off about me. Like, I knew he was not quite right.
If something wasn't right with him, and the fact that, I mean, he was just a character they just threw in the middle, so you knew he had something more involved, but I didn't think they would make him the ice truck killer. And then even furthermore, that he would be Dexter's brother.
Yeah, that I didn't get. I didn't see coming there.
So if you were, intuitive enough to figure out that, listen, Rudy is the ice truck killer, you would never thought that, okay, well, his connection to Dexter is that he was the guy that was, he was his brother in the cargo container with him.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't put that one together saying that, oh, it's his brother. You know, that's kind of like, well, you know, it's a yin and yang type thing, you know, especially with Harry's coat, like what we were saying before. But it's something that you can notice and pull something out as far as they introduce characters. The show doesn't waste time, and there's not a lot of filler.
Right, they don't.
And so, you know, I mean, there's like 13 episodes in the first season, I think, 13 or 14. So, you know, it seems like if they're going to introduce a character, and if he's sticking around for more than one or two, he's going to have a purpose. You know, I wasn't necessarily thinking that the that security guard, I didn't think that he was the, you know, I didn't necessarily think he was the killer, because he was just too, you know, simple and plucky as opposed to, you know, methodical or anything. There was something, I didn't think, there was something interesting. Why is he sticking around? You know, what's the point of showing Deborah's love interest as opposed to, you know, the ice truck killer?
What do you guys think about as far as the end of it? I'm you know, found out, I have some research that the book that Dexter let Brian live, he let him go. But in a TV show, they made sure that he wanted to kill Deborah because he felt like that was his rival for Dexter's attention. He just wanted to be loved. That was Brian's thing. He's like, he needed that connection with Dexter. So he wanted to be Mr. Serial Killer with Dexter, hand in hand. I mean, how do you think about it? You know, Dexter's disconnect. The fact that he was putting Deborah in danger. If he wasn't putting Deborah in danger in the end, he would have let him go.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact that Deborah was his true family in Dexter's eyes, that's why he decided, like, I had to, you know, I'm choosing her over you.
Right. I mean, going into season two, I mean, his family was Deborah, the kids, and you know, and depending on how they attacked him, he was like a... Go ahead.
I said, are there any things from season one that just wasn't right with you guys, that you felt was kind of funny or out of the blue?
I thought the ending was very stylized, that last maybe 5 minutes or so. It was very surreal, and it was kind of peculiar to see, you know, to have the, you know, the intro music being, you know, the ending of the show, and and just kind of really going over the top in what Dexter would think in his mind, you know, and how, you know, how he should be treated, you know, as a hero that saved the city from the ice truck killer.
Right. I mean, the way this series, and I thought I was thinking they wouldn't come back with the season two because it was just so, like, it seemed like it was just so final. And, you know, a lot of those Showtime series don't last too long anyway. And, you know, except for the fact that those people still trying to figure out what it was with Dexter that made him feel the way he felt. So, only thing that, I mean, how did Dexter become such a badass fighter?
He trained with Harry. I mean, he learned, you know, I guess he learned combat with Harry because, I mean...
They actually made a reference that those investigators realized he trained in jiu-jitsu in college. But I just kind of thought that was kind of thrown in there just to make him more of an equal to Dose, because Dose is a big dude. So for Dexter to be not at all afraid of this dude as far as a physical confrontation, it's like that kind of struck me a little bit.
Well, I mean, you see Dexter take down, like, you know, guys that are like 6'5", 300 and something pounds. I mean, you think he has to have some sort of, you know,
That's the Batman comparison, because this guy decided, when he decided he wanted to become a serial killer, he did everything in his possible to make himself the best serial killer he could be. Meaning he actually went and trained in jiu-jitsu just so he could have an edge to take down some people that might be physically imposing on him. He was in medical school. He decided to take forensic science. That's to me is brilliant too, because now I'm an expert in forensic science. So anything that they could, you know, he's so meticulous when he does his murders that, I mean, he did make some mistakes, but it was kind of hard to catch him because he knew exactly what they were looking for. Half the time he was the one looking for it.
Yeah. Yeah, like in the, that was season one with the trailer, or like with the coyote and his wife.
No, I don't remember that.
Really? Okay. Well, he Rita's friend from work, mm-hmm. Wants her family, you know, to be.
Oh yeah.
A coyote, and then he you know holds the family up for ransom for even more, or just to hold them up for more money, and then he threatens, okay. And then he ends up killing them, mm. You know, just because they wouldn't pay up, you know, and then he goes to the junkyard, and then, you know, you're like, oh, who is, you know, and then if someone happens to see, you know, that boy sees the,
I remember,
you know, the murder,
yeah,
and he's like, and Dexter's freaking out, like, oh my God, you know, I had everything under control. How could this, you know, how could this happen?
Right,
yeah, and he's like trying to cover up everything, and even though he didn't have anything to worry about, because the boy said, you know, Jesus saved him. So.
All right, well, let's move on to season two.
This was by far my favorite season.
Yeah, I really like season two.
And season two was my favorite till season four.
Yeah.
It's still, you know what, I think it still might be, because it really, season four didn't really explore as much into, you got to really know all of the characters, especially Dexter in season two. And I think the addition of, to me, I thought was his equal, Agent Lundy. The introduction to him really made things so difficult for Dexter. And not only did he have Lundy to deal with, the dokes really became a pain in the ass in season two.
And don't forget about Lila.
Oh, well, Lila's just so damn crazy that,
she's what made that series for me, basically.
Well, the beginning of season two, Dexter really tries to become, to blend in. So in trying to blend in, he becomes more passionate, you know, becomes a more human. And at the same time, that weakened him as his part-time job being a serial killer.
Yeah, I mean, he tried to stop completely. I mean, because he got caught, you know, I mean, he was saying he was addicted to something, and then he started to go to, you know, the meeting.
How brilliant was that? It's like he decided it was just an addiction. And Rita noticed that something was wrong with him, and he just kind of threw it off his drugs, right?
Yeah.
So he's going to rehab and taking a rehab instructions as his instructions for his killing habits. where he meets somebody equally, maybe two or three times more crazy than him.
Oh yeah, she's off the reservation. Was off the reservation, but man, I don't know how I feel about her. I feel very, like, it seemed almost, I'm not going to say forced or anything, but came out of the woodwork as just, a nut job control freak, you know, and just absolutely that manipulative. I felt like, come on, Dexter, you have to see that, you know, get rid of her. Yeah, and it felt like it took a couple episodes for that to happen, but, you know, I was very happy with the ending.
Yeah, because it was like, it's like having a girlfriend that's perfect for you, right? She teaches you everything, you know, she's compassionate, she's willing to listen, she's willing to work with you. And then you see this wild lady on the side that's like, hey, nothing's wrong with your addiction. Keep on doing it. Here's some more drugs. And of course, you know, most men's gonna run off to the crazy side for a little while. And when he was there, he realized, damn, this is fucked up. Going back to Rita. And as he tried to do that, she just slipped a wig and made his life very difficult.
I mean, yeah. I felt, and other people's lives difficult, too. I mean, when she framed Angel.
Yeah, anything to make his life difficult. Anybody that was connected to him. Pretty much the same thing in season one, the same, the vying for attention. In season one, Brian wanted to, Brian slash Rudy wanted the, his affection from his brother because he didn't have any family that he could connect to. And this season is, Lila decides, listen, I connect to you. And if you're not going to, if you're not going to be with me, then everybody that you're connected to is going to pay the price. And that's the same thing that was going on with Rudy and Brian's like, okay, you're not going to connect to me. The person that you're most connected to, I'm going to take her away with Deborah. In my opinion. So she was more, she was kind of like, even though she wasn't, you know, doing all this killing in this one, because pretty much this whole season took a different angle, saying, listen, there's somebody's going after the, what's it, they call him the Bay Harbor Butcher?
Yep. Yeah.
So Lundy was putting pressure, trying to catch him, being, you know, I guess he started to be a little sloppy or some of his body. Well,
we should make it clear that, you know, the Bay Harbor Butcher was Dexter. The stuff was caught.
Right, Bay Harbor Butcher was Dexter, so, I mean.
Yeah, because someone found his bodies, you know. Right, while diving, I think.
Outside, right.
Yeah.
Something he didn't compensate for. But let's go back to the beginning of season two. The beginning of season two, it starts off with him having a hard time killing. And that's where he started getting sloppy, because I guess he was still struggling with the fact that he had to kill his brother.
No, he couldn't. No. He couldn't kill because Dokes was trailing him all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think then the season start off with him, like, about to do a killing, and then he just, like, his nerves wasn't right. He was, like, not doing it like he normally does it. I mean, he was still, Joseph was making it hard because he was following him all the time. But in addition, when he did finally have an opportunity to kill, he was still having a hard time trying to actually go through with the act of it. Like his confidence was completely shook.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, I guess I just remember him, you know, taking up bowling, and then Dokes was always waiting outside the bowling alley.
Yeah, watching him.
I'm like, damn, Dokes. He was just a mad dog and a dog on a bone. He just wouldn't let it go.
No, and then also they made a point that Dexter was, his confidence in the code was gone. Because he had found out that, that Harry was sleeping with Dexter's biological mother.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he told Deborah in that season, right? Or was it in season three?
Told Deborah what?
That, you know, that Harry wasn't, you know, he wasn't Mr. Noble. He did, you know, he was sleeping with a, you know, a CI.
I think she was trying to find out something, and he kind of, I don't know, the way she found out about it was like by accident.
Right.
And it was in season four.
Season four? No, she really found out completely in season four. But
okay.
Back season two. Season two, she started having her doubts, and maybe I think Dexter might have said something like he wasn't Mr. Perfect, and she like, well, what do you mean he's not perfect? And she started freaking out, so.
Yeah, because she was like, because Dexter was acting really weird, like he wouldn't go have a drink on, you know, the anniversary of when he died.
But okay, in season two, Deborah,
whatever
moved
it
in
was,
with, she,
you know, when everyone moved, else was going out to drink,
she moved in with Dexter in season two for a little while, and that made it rough on him too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because he couldn't really sneak out very well.
Yeah,
with her being there to kill.
Yeah, right. He lost a lot of his independence in that.
Yeah. Okay, well, then it got into the whole point with Rita and her ex-boyfriend, right? The ex-husband, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he ended up getting killed in prison.
Yeah, I was really happy about that. I'm like, oh, God, I'm so sick of this guy. Just kill him already.
No, but then, I mean, Dexter was bothered by that because he was like, listen, he didn't fall under the code. So he ended up admitting to setting Paul up. And that's the whole point where Rita believes that Dexter's a heroin addict.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, he was doing drugs. I mean, just tell the truth. You'll be fine.
she's like, I swore she was going to tell her at that time. Yeah, I kill people for fun. I kill other serial killers. Please stay with me. But she's, you know, he said, no, it's like, if your girlfriend bothers you enough and say, hey, listen, I know you're doing this. You just brush me. Even if you're not doing it, like, yeah, I do it. That's what I do. Now what? She's like, well, I'll stay with you, but you got to go to Narcotics Anonymous. Okay.
Kind of trapping out there.
She was like, oh, I'll stay with you, you know. Just get her help from your drug problem and everything.
Yeah.
That's where he ends up meeting Lila.
Right.
And shit goes crazy then.
Oh, and then even before that, doesn't Dokes is following him so much, he's following him at the AA meetings, at the Narcotics Anonymous meetings.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, I knew something was wrong with you. So, you know, he's kind of cool for a second. Yeah, you have a problem. Okay, no big deal. And then they got into Dokes a little bit. Then they get into Dokes a little bit saying that, you know, he had sometime in season two, he killed somebody. Dokes shot somebody that was like...
Yeah, he was going to get smuggled out of the country because they, you know, they were, what's his name? The FBI agent. Dexter was setting up Dokes to look like the Bay Harbor Butcher.
But Dokes, being Snoopy and finding out, went into his apartment and found a glass slide.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dokes kind of figured out, but then that part of season two didn't make sense. Why didn't Dokes just take the glass slides to the police and have them check out everything?
Well, he didn't have a warrant to go in there. You know, he couldn't present evidence. You know, saying that, you know, hey, look what I found in Dexter's apartment when he didn't have a warrant to be in there in the first place.
Yeah, they wouldn't have looked at that evidence. They would have thrown it out because he didn't have the warrant.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he could have played that so different. He could have put it back and made him feel calm. I mean, Dokes wasn't a slow character. But for that one second, it made Dokes seem like he wasn't too bright. Because he knows, he could have took one of the slides and had, you know, went to the side and had a match and see if it matched up with the bodies or something. But, I mean, he knew it was something. It's something not right. He could have got a search warrant. Dexter wouldn't have known better that he had found his hiding spot. But anyway, that's me nitpicking.
Yeah, but see, that wouldn't make good TV.
Right, yeah. Exactly. That's me nitpicking, because I'm even though I like that how it ended, the season two ended, those were one of my favorite characters. I was hoping somehow he survived the explosion or something. I was like, please, bring him back somehow.
Oh, yeah. I mean... It was real funny. To me, it was like, when I first saw that, I was like, he just went out like a punk. You have got to be kidding me. That's how he's going to go?
From Lila.
Yeah,
from Lila.
From Lila's dumb ass. And he died on a mistake. He died on a mistake, pretty much. It's like, oh, he left it on. It's like, come on. Not Dokes. Dokes go out swinging a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I mean, he was like...
They left it to no doubt. They blew him to pieces.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was like Dexter was resigned to his fate that he was going to get caught, and he was making peace with that. And then all of a sudden, dumb luck comes in and and blows up Dokes.
How crazy was Lila to think that after him setting up Baptista, blowing up Dokes, hey, listen, I cleaned everything up for you. I love you. Be with me. She just knew Dexter was gonna go with him. No, did she try to kill? She tried to kill Rita's kids, right?
Yeah.
No.
She did because she brought him back. She brought him back to her place and then started the fire.
Oh my! Yeah, she tried to burn them alive too, right?
Wow. Yeah.
That bitch was crazy.
And then, then she said, "Oh, you're not gonna like that." And she goes to Paris.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, with the whole thing with Dose is that through the whole season. Like midway, was it midway through the season when they realized that they, somehow Dexter turned around that he was the Bay Harbor Butcher, which kind of never did match up, right? But he was walking around with the blood samples, right? So,
well, he got Dokes to go over the edge in, you know, at the station and, you know, attack him a couple times.
Yeah, he had him attack.
And then he
was a good cop for so long, and you know, for them to turn around is so easy. For everybody to so easily believe he was the Bay Harbor Butcher. Only one that really was fighting for his honor was LaGuardia, but then again, she used to sleep with him, so she felt like there's no way he could be that. But everybody just kind of like, I mean, I guess the evidence was overpowering by that time. Though he's walking around with the slides of all the dead people in his pocket. And maybe, yeah, probably he was.
Yeah, and we're forgetting a few things that happened that season, like when Dexter sent in that, you know, that what was it, the manuscript or whatever, to Lundy, and Lundy ended up finding out that this guy is, he's, you know, working. He's got to be a cop or something working because he's trying to throw us off. And I mean, so that really. You know, that really didn't help Dokes, you know.
It's funny, because the whole season, Dexter's pretty much right. He's dreaming of himself being in prison and getting the electric chair and everything. He's like, oh, I'm just going to turn myself in. This guy's too good. Everything's falling apart around him. I'm supposedly using drugs. I'm with this crazy bitch. I have a hard time sleeping with my girlfriend. I mean, he was having some really hard season one, he couldn't even do it. By season two, he was, you know, really getting into it. I guess that was his only outlet now, because he couldn't kill no more.
Right.
Barely. Right?
Right.
Right.
So that was a really good... To me, that was such a good angle, because first season is kind of like a whodunit. Every episode, okay, it was like a whodunit. And every episode, somebody's going to get pretty much killed. Some bad guy. So how long you wonder how long were they going to able to keep that formula going and keep it so fresh? So, you know, I was really pleasantly surprised how big a curveball they threw with season two and kept it really engaging, and kept Dexter still the same character he was, and show all the intricate sides to Dexter that he's, yeah, he is, looks at him. Wasn't in this season that he went to a comic book store. And he saw these things around in the comic book store, and he likened himself to a comic book character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like the Dark Avenger or something like that. Right, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, am I really the Dark Avenger, or am I not? I mean,
or am I crazy?
Or am I just crazy? Or am I crazy following this guy's code? Or was this guy crazy and I'm following a crazy man's code? I mean, he really had a lot of doubt in season two. But at the same time, is his number one survival tactic always, you know, his survival instinct always kicked in. Like, listen, I gotta save myself.
Yeah, and we're also forgetting the Deborah Lundy relationship.
Oh God, I see why
they hate
her so much. I guess I was skipping that too. It was kind of, I mean, it made sense in a way, because she's still looking for that father figure.
Well, it also pushed, I mean, it was also pretty tough on Dexter, I mean, because she was trying so hard to help Lundy, I mean, and Dexter had his own sister, you know, trying to find that, you know, capture him, basically.
I thought for sure that she was going to get killed sooner or later by Dexter. I just looked at her like, Dexter, this is going to have to kill, because she's going to get too close to finding out everything. And depending on her reaction, either she's going to become a serial killer herself, or she's going to, try to turn them in.
Well, I think they made it that Deborah, like, right then and there, Deborah was the one thing keeping him, you know, from jumping off the deep end. I mean, Deborah was the only family he had, and was the only thing that was, Rita and the kids, they were being, you know, slowly, you know, getting in that position, but before Rita, Deborah was the only thing he had, you know, to really keep him from going totally crazy.
Maybe it's my dislike of her, but I wouldn't mind her getting chopped up by Dexter.
Oh.
I think that would be an interesting twist. Because, I mean, her character to me is not going anywhere. She's still, I mean, I don't know. Unless she becomes the head of the department. Because her and Lundy were like, that whole relationship was just weird.
It was creepy. Yeah. I mean, he was how old?
It was very creepy.
I mean, they didn't have to get it into a sexual relationship. They could have just, you know, I don't know. But I guess sex sells, but damn, that's kind of crazy. I mean, okay, let's talk about Lundy for a minute, though. What do you guys think about his character?
I loved his character.
Yes, I did too.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, his character was... And that guy, to me, never been a good actor, right? But he's acting his ass off. That's Carradine, right? Keith Carradine?
I think so.
Yeah, Keith Carradine. That's Keith Carradine. I mean, he was so so confident, so smart about everything. But, I mean, he was damn near a better Bay Harbor Butcher than Dexter was.
Well, it was just, you know, it was very much the cat and mouse game, and he was the perfect cat to the mouse, you know, to Dexter being the mouse.
All right. Yeah, he was perfect. Dexter had to have luck come into play for him to outsmart this guy. If it wasn't for some of the crazy events that happened, Lundy would have called him.
Oh, yeah.
And Dexter knew it. If it wasn't, I mean, he had everything had to play out perfectly. Because if Dose wasn't so nosy, if he didn't get involved with Lila. How cool is Rita? Rita's like, hey, you used drugs, you cheated on me. You don't like to have sex with me, but I'm going to keep you anyway. You're good with the kids. Man, that's...
Well, she...
That's a hell of a woman, I tell you. I don't know what Dexter did to her. I don't know. It must be some blood voodoo things that she did when he's doing these killings. But, man, she would not leave Dexter's side for nothing. She was loyal.
Well, yeah. She did say that, you know, I know you're a good man. You know, despite what... I mean, it seems like she's fine. Like, you never know if she has the woman's intuition to know that he does, you know, kill people.
I always thought that Rita had something funny going on herself, too. I mean, I don't know, because it just seems she was too accepting. Because, I mean, okay, one thing to admit to setting up her ex-husband, who ended up dying in prison, and you're like, okay, well, he wasn't that. He beat me anyway, so he's gone. He stood up to her over her own mother. But she was a bitch, so it didn't make a difference. because of who he was dealing with, I guess she never really found out that, but her kids were in danger. Her kids almost died because of Dexter. And hey, it's all good. And then by season three, it got even worse. As far as her lord, I mean, he was a better man to her by the time season three rolled around, but. Man, I mean, then he found out he was sleeping with Lila, and,
well,
and was using drugs, and I mean, she stuck by him, especially after going through what she went through with the first husband. It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really upset me about that is he didn't really sleep with Lila till, I mean, they were broken up.
Till after they broke up.
So he never actually cheated, technically.
Well, they didn't technically cheat, but I mean, he was... going to the whole narcotics place to try to get better, and then he finds another vice. I mean, as far as a woman's concerned, they wouldn't be very forgiving towards that. Like, listen, you something's wrong with you, bro. Get out of here.
But they established Rita wasn't, you know, 100% stable. She had issues. I mean,
yeah, I guess she liked self-destructive men, and I guess Dexter was as self-destructive as you get, right?
Well, I think when Dexter started going to the NA meetings, and then he found his, well, you know, she was pushing him to find a sponsor and everything, it seemed like he only chose Lila as a sponsor because out of spite to say, okay, fine, I don't want to go to this because I don't need it, and, you know, look, I'm really not on drugs, you know, so I'm going to play your game, and we're going to see how you like it. It seemed more out of a spiteful thing as opposed to, you know, oh, I actually want to get better, or out of some sort of interest.
That's true.
That's kind of what I saw. That's what I took away from it, you know, initially, you know, after the first couple episodes.
I don't know. I think, you know, Dexter's just really, you know, like, you know, he's saying, you know, he doesn't really have emotions and that kind of stuff. So, like, when he chose Lila, he really didn't understand what he was doing to Karita. That's kind of what I saw with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't understand why she was so upset.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be true to Dexter's character, he had such a disconnect with everything anyway that it would just make sense that he wouldn't understand that him sleeping with somebody after they broke up would still affect somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that would have... So, well, on to season three, you know, talking about Rita. Does Rita find out she's pregnant at the very beginning of season three?
Yeah, she was, like, eating something. I think she was eating pudding or something.
Mm.
Like, she was cooking pudding, and then she's like, oh, my God. The last time I had pudding was with...
with Cody.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, she's pregnant. Well, you know, her moods were kind of showing that, too.
Yeah, that was funny. By times this season, you really started liking Rita. Rita could have broke up with him in season two, and that wouldn't have been a big deal. But by the time season three rolled around, she became the centerpiece, almost me, the centerpiece of the show, because Dexter was as intent on being right by her as he was to keep going with his code.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes that conflicted, and, you know, that plays to a head in the next season. But in this season, it's pretty much Dexter versus Rita versus the code. But, okay, refresh my memory. In the beginning of season three, they had this whole thing where Dexter gets into a fight, and then he kills the guy, like, because of self-defense, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But he was the wrong guy, right?
Right.
So that bothered Dexter because it messed up his code, right?
Initially,
but he kind of figured out he still wasn't a good guy, so he accepted it eventually, right?
And that just stirred up a lot of shit for Dexter.
Right? Yeah.
Because of the guy that he killed ended up being...
The defense attorney,
Miguel Prado's brother, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what do you guys think of his character?
I thought Miguel was a good character. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I thought Miguel was a good... I mean, it was good to have a best friend for Dexter for a short time, you know? I mean, especially when Miguel found out what Dexter did and... You know, was starting to understand. You really thought, hey, there's someone who understands Dexter, you know, and who isn't crazy. But that turned out a little false.
Oh, well, turns out he was crazy.
So what you think about him, William?
I just thought
that was William. I did like that. You know, Dexter did have a person he could confide in finally. And wouldn't really dismiss him out of, you know, like, disgust or something of what he does. But then, you know, you find out, you know, Miguel has his own, you know, personal agenda.
I hated this character from the very minute he first... I hated it. I hated the whole best friend angle and, you know, I'm going to be buddy-buddy. I'm going to teach you the ropes on how to be a serial killer, buddy. Let's go. I couldn't stand it at all. It wasn't that I didn't like the character. The whole Miguel Prada and, you know, another prominent member in law enfororcement going into becoming a vigilante. That part was good. That was a good angle, but I didn't like the whole portrayal of Dexter feeling that he needed his brotherhood. I mean, if that's the case, he should have kept his brother alive. And, you know, and then, you know, not to mention Harry's on his shoulder the whole time. What the hell are you doing? This is going to get you killed. What are you doing? Oh, I couldn't. I didn't like how Prado. He felt like he was from the very beginning. Once Dexter started showing him stuff or whatever, he got power went to his head too quick. I mean, I guess that would happen, but man, he just felt like he had the juice for real. He felt unbeatable. And, you know, that to begin, and that whole point of him rising to power made Dexter decide, like, hey, listen, you gotta go, best friend or not. And, you know, but Miguel was so powerful, like, listen, if you tell on me, I'm gonna have everything crumble all around you. So let's go.
Yeah, the entire relationship seemed like just a big game of one-upsmanship, and you know they were just trying to, each one was just trying to get the other, you know, the upper hand on the other one. And probably, I'd say, I don't know, probably by halfway through the season when he started kind of losing control. And then he goes after the defense attorney. You know, he half abided by the code, you know, but, you know, like Dexter said, the defense attorney was just doing her job.
Oh, but back to the defense attorney, right? Before she met her demise, didn't it seem like her and LaGuardia were about to get it on? Like, she was starting to get all extra, nicey-nicey. She was visiting her, was like, hey, what's up? Let's have a drink. Yeah, girl, knock it out.
Yeah.
This season sucks so far, but
all
right, I like this.
Well, it didn't occur to me then, but thinking back, maybe.
Okay, Ellen's about to get busy, and then they killed her. I'm like, God damn it, Dexter. They say this is the only good storyline you had going. But the whole point that he started using his new Prado, started using his newfound power to get rid of people that was just in his way in the legal field.
Yeah, he was using it for his own personal gain.
So, you know, he ended up killing her, and then he was so sloppy with it, and then he just felt like he could manipulate anybody, including Dexter. That was his downfall.
Yeah.
But what about then they also had introduced they start getting back into Deborah's character and trying to show her trying to go for a badge, and they were going after. Pretty much they were going after Dexter, but they didn't know it, right? But it was, they was going after the Skinner. There was somebody that was killing people and skinning people.
Yeah, was I the only one that was really disappointed with that series, Serial Killer?
That was forgettable. Like, I don't even remember it. So.
Yeah, it was just a throwaway because, I mean, it was almost like, okay, we're going to go after Dexter again, but because Dexter killed the wrong person, but really there was somebody out there doing something, but he wasn't really doing much. He was some little, like an immigrant that was killing people a little bit.
A tree trimmer, I think he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
They could barely catch him, and then, of course, you know, whoever Deborah is dealing with is obviously, either they're going to be bad or something bad is going to happen to them. So, Deborah started dating that guy, Anton, the fake CI.
Yeah.
Fake oh, God. Right? They always have to have Deborah in some relation.
Oh yeah, I mean that. To me, that's her whole character. It's either is this is extreme. It's she couldn't be by herself. She didn't like this guy at first, and she felt it's like she felt guilty for busting his chops, so she decided to sleep with him.
Yeah.
and not only sleeping, to fall deeply in love with him, and he was nothing but like a musician, a free. I think only reason she liked him really was because he. Was on a crazy schedule, so she didn't have to commit too much time to him. He was just there.
Yeah, because supposedly she was still getting over Lundy.
Yeah, well, she's still in love with Lundy, supposedly, right? So.
Well, speaking of that, what do y'all think about the Quinn?
Dokes replacement.
Yeah.
I didn't
like him either. He seemed, you know, just.
I thought he was a Skinner for a second. I was hoping he would be.
I did too.
I didn't think he would be the Skinner. I think he would have been. I thought he had some other sort of plan.
He just seemed shady. From the minute they introduced him, he seemed like he was a dirty cop, at least.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's all he was, really.
Yeah, well, no, like with that internal investigator saying, you know, that he's not on the up and up, but then really never said what he did wrong.
He wasn't paying the CI, that's all.
That was it?
Yeah. That's what I remember.
That's bullcrap then.
I know.
Yeah, they just leave him hanging. I just hope they kill him soon. What about, you know what? We forgot to talk about my favorite character in the show. And he is nothing but comic relief. Masuka.
Masuka.
I'm
going to bring him up too.
You know what? I think in the end, if anybody ever finds out his secret and is going to just live with it, it's going to be Masuka. Because, I mean, he's brilliant, right?
Exactly.
He finds out all kind of stuff, and Dexter's like, "Damn, okay." And he might even know already, as far as I was concerned. But I mean, Masuka's freaking brilliant, and his whole take on life is like live on the moment. Every time you see him, he's like, "Hey, we're going to the club to get drinks. We're gonna go to a strip bar. I know two women. We can do something freaking." What's her name? Always hates him. No, I'm Deborah.
I love his interactions with Deborah. That's just hilarious.
Especially in season 4.
Yeah, we won't even get into season.
Hopefully
in season 5 they end up being together. That would be. I'm calling it now. Masuka's gonna end up being with Deborah, and she's gonna love it.
When Masuka kind of went off and is saying, it's like, you know, none of you came to my presentation. You think you're my friends? No, I'm just your I'm just your whooping boy. You know, and then he is like the crux of that department.
Yeah.
He carries so much weight, and if they don't have him in there, it's a damn shame.
Because the show is so heavy at times that you just see his character. You know, he don't even have to say anything. A lot of times Deborah cut him off before he said, "Don't even say anything. Don't even look at me." And you know, that's it. He's like, "I really won't say nothing." He just walks away. He just turns around and walks away.
Or like that when he was planning Dexter's bachelor party.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. You know, he was in some commercial. He was in that commercial that won awards. The one with he was kind of boom. I mean, this guy is hilarious. Hilarious persona. You just see him, you just want to smile. I mean, I don't know. Is it?
Oh, yeah. when he thought the Skinner was Asian, and there was the blood trail with somebody in socks.
Yeah, socks thing. Out.
And he's like, "God damn it! Why does it have to fulfill a stereotype?"
Yeah, he's classic. He's classic. By this time in the series, Baptista becomes like a side note. In the first season, they were trying to get into his, you know, relationship with him with kids. He even got shot and took a bullet for the team. Season two, he was kind of like, he was partnered up with Dokes a lot before Dokes went rogue. Right?
Yeah, and he was kind of a sap because, I mean, Lila just strung him around, you know, and just, I mean, set him up.
He was searching for love and... He's like, okay, forget it. He's like, to me, after season two, he kind of gave up. I don't even remember him in season three, to tell you the truth.
Was it season two or three that he found that,
He found another detective, right?
He found that woman who, you know, who was an undercover.
Yeah, that's season three, I think.
Yeah. that was throwaway, too. It was just to give him something to do. It had nothing to do with the story. It was just, okay, well, he had somebody, you know?
But that still goes to the he wanted to find a connection with somebody. I mean,
he can't be alone. He definitely is not a character that's going to be alone. He wants to have somebody and profess his love to the world. He's such a romantic. He's so, you know, so pure. Didn't he meet the detective on a he called a prostitute and she ended up being like on a bus.
Yeah, she was like, go away.
That's how he met
the lady started dating, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. That to me just shows that season three was just, it was just searching for everything because they just had everybody partnered up with somebody for no real reason. LaGuardia had no past. She wasn't trying to go for the top anymore. She would just lay back. But no, LaGuardia did have a purpose because she used to date and prod up. Gosh, she dated everybody.
Well, anyone she she has to feel so bad because at least through season three, you know, anyone she's ever gotten close to ends up dead.
Yeah.
dead or demoted or something, right? God, she has some bad luck. I would just quit the force if I was her. I mean, I her character I hate more than Deborah's because it just makes her like she just power hungry. She always has another motive for what she's doing.
The one character I hated more than anyone was that department head, or it was the new chief that they brought in. I forget what season it was, so maybe two or three. It was that black woman.
Oh yeah,
I was like, this is garbage. I'm like, oh, just this is bullshit. And I'm like, kill her, get rid of her, do something.
And then she was flippy flop because one second she was really just wanted to fire LaGuardia, right? Next instance, she's like, okay, I understand, sister girl, let's go. I'll give you the leeway to do it. I'm like, come on. I mean, I wish she was a killer too, so Dexter could have taken her a knife too. All right, what about, what? Okay, before we finish off on season three, what do you guys think of Dexter's ritual? And that's something that he's always, I mean, he always makes sure he puts pictures of something to remind the people why they're in this position that they're in right now. He always gives them a monologue before he kills them, right?
I think he does that mainly just to, I mean, kind of justify his actions to, you know, yeah. They're evil.
I think his ritual gives him, like, one last chance to say, I mean, nothing they say is going to let him get out of the position. But he just wants them to realize, like, yeah, you were terrible. It's almost like a chance for you to admit your sins and be at peace before I put you to peace.
And that's never how it is. They're always cursing Dexter out or something like that before the night.
Every once in a while, somebody's like, you know, they're always like, well, why have you doing it? I mean, he's made a couple of mistakes with that, right? But he sits there with the knife and he cuts them. I mean, he really gets, you know, every time you see him do it, he really enjoys it, right? It's just like a really liberating feeling once you take somebody's life.
Yeah, and was it season three where actually somebody escaped?
Yeah.
Like somebody actually got out?
Yeah, when he started messing with Prado, he got real sloppy.
Now, was that all, was season three the one where he had the car accident?
No.
Oh, okay. That was season two.
That was the beginning of season four.
It was first episode of season
four. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was that big, it was that really big guy.
Yeah, it was a really big guy. Yeah, he actually broke out of the Saran wrap.
Yeah. And he started using duct tape.
Yeah, but I mean, how silly are the departments? Didn't when they killed Prado, right? He ended up becoming the Skinner. Give me a fucking break, right? The district attorney, and the damn, you know, this main prominent figure ended up being a Skinner, and you guys just say, hey, whatever. I mean, but not now. Miami used to be a city under martial law. You have one of your main detectives. He's a Bay Harbor butcher. Your district attorney is a damn Skinner.
What? No, they caught the Skinner like right at the end.
Yeah, so they
because the Skinner captured that.
That's, oh no! I'm mixing up. He was killed by the Skinner supposedly.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Okay. My bad, erase my former rant. But either way, you know, Miami's just a deathbed for serial killers. I mean, it's like this is a club serial killer.
Come retire in Miami. Oh. I was just going to say, come retire in Miami and kill people.
Well, they said it in season one that Miami had... Miami has the lowest conversion rate in murders, so it's they, you know, set yeah. it, at least you set it up nicely like
right,
that.
Perfect setting. the end of season three, they pretty much the Skinner was hired by the part of the season right in the last two or three episodes it got good is where when they snatched Dexter away. But they think that, you know, they set you up to think that he's caught by the guy that's contracted to kill him. But it's really them pulling him away for the bachelor party?
Yeah.
Right.
Now, up to that point of the season, I was like, God damn, this season could just be done. I was like, oh, damn, he got caught by this dude.
And then he decks, who did he deck? Matsuka, I think?
As soon as he gets out of the truck, he points to him. But then he gets caught by him for real the next episode, right? He gets caught by Skinner for real, real Skinner.
Right, and then Prado lured him up to the roof so the Skinner could see him.
Mm-hmm. But then Dexter got into real, you know, real squirmish with him and kills him after realizing he wanted to stay alive to witness the birth of his child and marry Rita.
And I love that part when, like, the cops are coming. He's like, oh, shit, I killed him. What should I do? I should throw the body in front of the car. That part was just funny to me.
This is another thing. Point. I mean, this is, I guess, suspension of belief. But, you know, every time that, I mean, this guy wasn't Skinner. But, man, Dexter, for a guy that's just supposed to be a blood splatter expert, is always around at the end of a scene of one of these. You know, something bad was always going on around him, right? He was near the actual suicide of the ice cream truck killer. He's here for this guy just falling at, for some reason, attacking him and capturing him. I mean, you know, he's around with the Skinner again. Like, this is two serial killers that he's with at their end. You know, maybe some, I don't know, maybe he should be suspended or something. I don't know. Okay, that's the end of Dexter right now. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
Let's see if we can get into, you know, our predictions of season 5, maybe.
Okay, sounds good to me. You want to start it off?
Yeah, I think something's going to happen.
But I'll say nothing on season 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think something's going to happen with the kids. Like something is going to, he's going to get called into court, like, protected, like, child custody kind of thing. Like, something's going to happen there. I'm just seeing it.
I just see him as being going away from the code again and being more ruthless. What about you, William? What were you talking for? I'm sorry, I'm mixing you guys up.
Oh, I think the same thing. I mean, I think he's just going to, I mean, stray from the code, and, I mean, it's going to get crazy.
Yeah, I think the body count, if people end up counting body counts in this show is going to reach some astronomical levels of body counts this season. Because I don't think this is going to have much remorse.
Yeah, and I think Deborah's going to find out, finally.
Hmm.
Yeah, because Deborah's getting close.
I'm playing she's part of the body count. Well, anyway. talking about body counts. There's one hero in the DC universe that never kills, but he's also has a dark passenger because of what he's seen and what he witnessed. And it's very similar to Dexter as far as the origin's concerned in my book. It's on Batman. What do you guys, think about the Batman animated series? You guys want to talk about this for a while.
William, you go first. Or
yeah, go ahead.
Matt, if you want to go.
No. You guys go ahead.
Okay, well, I personally grew up watching Batman. I mean, not as religiously as, like, Spider-Man or others, but Batman was a big part for me. And I just love that series. I mean, I didn't know it for the longest time that Mark Hamill was the Joker. I mean, I didn't know that till a couple years ago. When I discovered IMDb, basically. But, I mean, That was, like, the series to watch, I mean, for Batman. I mean, it did better than any movie, I think. I mean, The Dark Knight was great, but I think the Batman 90s animated series was true. I mean, really showed the story, you know.
Yeah, I think it was most true to the actual comic book origins. And it really showed the dark side of The Dark Knight. I mean, it didn't, for a comic book, for a TV series that came on in the, I guess, after school hours,
mm-hmm.
and not something that was shown on cable, they did a really good job of showing how Batman was a dark Avenger for real.
Yeah, like the two shows I grew up with was Spider-Man and Batman. So like I just like even though you know I said Venom was my favorite villain of all time, but Batman has the best villains, plural. Like. His villains are just amazing.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The villains, even more so than the comic book to me, the villains stand out more in the animated series by far. They did the best represent. I mean, the Joker, Scarecrow, Poison Ivy. You know,
Freeze.
Mr. Freeze, Two-Face. I mean, they haven't done a Two-Face. They haven't done a Two-Face right since. I mean, they should just get the voice of the guy that does Two-Face for the anime series and just make him do the acting part because he was perfect. I mean, and there's no animated series that I could sit there and say the voices were all perfect for the character. I mean, Batman's voice was perfect.
Joker Kevin Conroy is Batman, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch that new Justice League movie just because I heard that he wasn't going to do the voice of Batman.
None of the original voice actors are in that new Justice League movie.
and that's bad of a turnoff to me. I can't do it.
It was painful.
Yeah, I didn't see the new Justice League. I think I have a copy of the DVD, or it's on Netflix or something. But just the way that they presented the show, it was very stylized. It was gritty and it was real. You know, you didn't get the sense. I mean, I guess that's one of the appeals of Batman to a lot of people, is that he's a very real character, and that everything, you know, the extraordinary amount of discipline that it would take to do the things that he does, yeah, and not to mention the pools of wealth that he has, you know, it's very plausible. And, you know, villains aside, you know, some of their, like Clayface or, you know, Penguin or Mr. Freeze, you know, they're all very real threats. You know, they're all very, or Croc or something, like they're very, real characters.
A thing about Batman series, unlike most of the comic book heroes, even though they're all dressed up in costumes, whatever, none of these guys are really, you know, not too many of them are super powered. It's mostly some kind of psychological thing that's wrong with these characters, or something that pushed them over the edge one way or another. More people can relate to them because they're not powered by electricity or powered by, you know, whatever, radiation or whatever. They use certain devices. So be it, but the Joker has no superpowers. Scarecrow is just a scientist. At most, they have some acrobats, and they do get into a little bit, but they don't use that as a crutch. It's, you really get into the character more so than their power.
Right.
So that, to me, always made Batman's villains more real, because, I mean, they could be a regular person pretty much.
Right, and, you know, I don't know how they got away with it, but, you know, there never was killing in it, but they would use, unlike Spider-Man, you would hear, it was gunshots, it was bullets that, you know, the cops or enemies were fighting back and forth with, you know, if they ever got into a shootout.
Yeah.
And it just very much seemed very real world.
Yeah, and the thing with Batman, even though he didn't kill nobody, he sure would mess somebody up. or at least threaten them to the point that they thought he was going to. I mean, you know, Batman has no problems hurting you. He just won't kill you. He won't kill you by weapon anyway. If he's forced to kill you, I guess he would. But, you know, he never would, you know. I still never understand why he never would kill the Joker. I think he should have been gone a long time ago. But, you know, as the movie puts it, it's like, yeah, he's dead on. You kind of need me. you would dissolve as a hero if I wasn't there. So.
Yeah, following the wake of the Dark Knight, who was it? I think Brian Mendoza wrote a graphic novel of the Joker, and it kind of takes a lot from. Let's see, who is it? Hold on here. Let's see. Yeah, the other Brian Azzarello. Or, you know, Israelio or something, or, yeah, excuse me, I butchered his name, but he very much he took very much the Joker from the Dark Knight, you know, Heath Ledger's Joker, and, you know, kind of wrote a story off that, and it was a really good read. You know, if you can pick it up, go ahead. But it is one of the better Batman comics that's out there.
All right, I'll have to look into it. I think I'm going to start doing comics now. Wait for the whole series to be done and just buy the actual book, because I can't. So it's hard for me to follow, just to keep on going to a comic store and wait, because the release dates are so whenever. I mean, sometimes they come out monthly, you know, depending on how quick they can get the book out. At least in my opinion. I haven't seen my comic book store isn't too current with. I mean, I guess give them a list and they can hold the episodes for me, but I'd just rather just read it all at one time.
Yeah, there is an advantage to reading, you know, the trade paperbacks, you know, or the collections that come out, you know, a short run or whatever story arc that comes out. But what I've noticed is, well, those are hard to come, they don't release those right away, and then you'll get missing episodes too.
Oh, okay. I guess I better step my game up.
It's tough, though. It's tough to stay, you know, kind of loyal to that.
Especially with these series now, they have a lot of, they cross over into a lot of different titles. So you have to you like get a checklist and you have to get like 5-10 comics each month just to keep up with the storyline fully. I don't know.
Yeah, because I actually started reading the Marvel Civil War.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, that, you know, it's just spread out into like the Spider-Man, X-Men. You know, like there's a Civil War series all on its own, and even in the corners of some panels, it's, you know.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Wait, what's this guy doing here? Look, see, you know, Civil War number 7.
Yeah, it's a bit much. I started to do that with the Green Lantern series that was out, The Blackest Night.
Oh yeah, that's still continuing, I think.
And I gave up. I said, there's too many comics to get, and I'm not even that much into the comics to follow it like that. Just to follow the main story arc, if you just follow the main story arc, you would be completely lost. So.
Yeah, what I've tried to do is I stick with pretty much one character, and you know, follow that. You know, and try to follow that and read that as loyally as I can. You know, right now I've done more, you know, buying and collecting as opposed to reading, so I kind of have to go through that. But, you know, I'll read the major, like, the event that they're doing. Like, right now it's the Siege and the Siege Embedded. I'm not really interested in, I don't know, I think it's just because of some of the other characters and some of the other writers. I don't think they do a particularly good job. And, like, I'm admittedly more of a Marvel fan, but I can't stand like the Fantastic Four, you know, the Hulk. I find it very in like some of the other Iron Man, like the Invincible Iron Man. I think that the writers do a great job, and the artwork, as well as artwork, a great job in presenting that comic book. But it can be so much to try to get into, and like something I'm amazed at is that Amazing Spider-Man releases just about every week. I'm like, really? He's that popular that they have to do one, a weekly release, where, you know, they have different artists working on it, you know, to get the release out each month. But the story, the writer is pretty much the same. Like, they only have 2 or 3 writers doing it.
Yeah, that's crazy. I can't. The whole Spider-Man and the Hulk. What's going on with the Hulk now? I see that he has, like, Red Hulk, Green Hulk, Girl Hulk, Boy Hulk, Sun Hulk. I mean. Right after the World War Hulk series, I was thinking that the series might take back off, and it just went in such a crazy direction. I don't know. I went to a comic store almost. I said, "Well, God, come on, give me a goddamn break."
Yeah, well, we kind of touched on it last episode, or, you know, our pilot episode, where we were talking about, you know, Spider-Man has a daughter now, and his daughter has a kid, and I mean.
Yeah, it's a bit much. I did pick up a copy of the Ultimates.
Which one? Like the original Ultimates or like the new?
I think the new one. It just came out this week, and it was like
okay.
They were like it's like it's pretty much like a reboot. It seemed like, and it was starting off with like Thor starting to. He was down in hell with Hela and. It's talking about Tony's. I mean, it was like a really good reboot. Like, if I was a kid now, that's where you need to start at. Leave all the rest of those alone. Because they were more going into the Avengers starting. To me, it was like the Avengers starting over. It almost seemed like a number one issue of the Avengers, but told in 2010, that's all.
Yeah, because I know that they rebooted it. Something I missed, Ultimatum, and I guess that ended the Ultimates universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're rebooting everything, and you know, now Iron Man has one. It's the Ultimate Armor Wars. There's Ultimate Enemy, which I picked up. I haven't gotten a chance to read it. There's Ultimate Avengers, Ultimate Spider-Man, which is, you know, he's back in high school. And then they came out with there's Ultimate X, which it looks like it's Wolverine, and now there's the Ultimates, and I'm kind of like, okay. We have the Ultimate Avengers, which is what the point of the Ultimates was. Yeah, I guess I just have to do my reading on it, so.
Yeah, I read that one episode. I think since it's starting from number one, I could probably keep up with it, maybe. I don't want to get a subscription, so. But anyway, let's get back to Batman. Other than, everybody know Joker is everybody's favorite villain of Batman. Who would be your second in the animated series?
I've been thinking about that, you know, because I knew that question was going to come up, and kind of a tie for me between, like, Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy.
About you, Stuart?
For me, it's also a tie. Mr. Freeze, the same. But Clayface. I really like Clayface. Because, like, he could be anybody. You know, he could just, you know, he could be walking down the street, walk right by, you know, Batman, and wouldn't even know it.
I like the introduction of Clayface because I never seen him in a comic book or anywhere else. He's unique to me in the animated series, and you know they did such a good job with his character being pretty much an everyday man who was just trying to get ahead.
Well, no, he was an actor.
Right, he's an actor, but I mean he wasn't a villain. He's not a villainous person.
Right.
That's what I guess I'm trying to say. He's not a villainous person. And even as him becoming Clayface, it was more of an accident. So, well, what about you, Matt? What's your favorite?
Well, I really enjoyed the Riddler, but I think they kind of did him a disservice. You know, he didn't get much airtime as far as, you know, being a villain or anything. He was always very periphery, and they didn't, they didn't give him that kind of spotlight or anything. So I guess I'm kind of disappointed in that because I was like the Riddler. He had his thing of leaving questions and everything, but he was a very smart criminal. I guess, boy, yeah, it almost seems like there's such a drop off between, you know, the enemy from the Joker. Just because, you know, thinking back and watching the series, there really wasn't anyone, you know, that could match that. And they all were each episode is very one shot, and they didn't have very many, progressive stories.
To me, I guess it's to stick to the theme of two characters. Mine would be Catwoman. I've always liked the dynamic that Catwoman and Batman had. But they didn't really do her too much in the animated series either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was the villain in the first one.
Right.
Like the very first episode, it was the introduction of Catwoman.
And are you sure? Because I thought the first episode was Man-Bat.
I think the first episode was Man-Bat, but I think...
Was it?
Yes.
I read was wrong.
I don't think they had Catwoman until like the second season.
Maybe. And Catwoman was always...
Maybe I was on the wrong season then. I don't know.
Catwoman was always a partner.
The thing with this is in the way that they played it, it was episodic, but it didn't really have an order. I mean, there was a couple two-parters here and there, but I mean, you could play it completely out of order and wouldn't make much of a difference to me.
Yeah.
And, was it Ra's al Ghul's character? I love that character. Because that's somebody that Batman, for some reason, well, I mean, by the time they got to Batman Begins, it showed that he was even his teacher. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it gets pretty deep when it's dealing with him and, the Fountain of Youth and his daughter and his relationship with the daughter.
Yeah, just to cut in real quick, Stuart, you were right. The season one, episode one, was The Cat and the Claw, part one.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. Yeah, okay. It was an introduction.
They joined forces.
Catwoman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was also, right there in episode one, there was also, you know, there was a love interest already from just that first episode.
But thinking about it again, I mean, I don't know if y'all would count it as the Joker or not, I mean, with the Joker, but Harley Quinn would probably be, you know, my favorite if you don't count her with the Joker.
Right.
Because I just love that character. I thought that character was just amazing.
Her character was always fun.
Yeah.
But to me, she was always like a sidekick to the Joker. So I never really... She never was going to take Batman on head on, never. So I don't really consider her a main protagonist to Batman. But I always loved her character. I love how they played her. The character I think I hated the most in this anime series, but I mean, he really didn't. I mean, some of the characters that have a lot of get a lot of airtime and everything else didn't get none in the animated series. Like, because they were too ridiculous. That'd be like the Penguin, the Mad Hatter. Those guys were barely in the anime series, and I don't think I used to like them back when I was a kid, but I don't see how Batman even fits into how Penguin even fits into the universe of Batman anymore.
Well, he was a jewel thief is what they kind of made it out to seem. He was like an art and jewel thief. I mean, Granted, that's kind of, you know, very as we would see it now, it's pretty lame. But
yeah, I'd say he was probably the most lame character of all of his. I mean, he wouldn't give him a challenge at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know. An episode that has always stuck with me was one. It was like, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like I almost had him, and it was Croc, Poison Ivy, Two-Face, and the Joker sitting around playing cards. Oh, and I think the Penguin too. But they were sitting around playing cards, and they were all saying that they were, you know, how, you know, who had the best story when they almost got Batman.
I remember that episode. That was a good.
And then at the end, you know, Batman was just in disguise playing Croc, and everyone else,
I remember that. Yeah,
the police department. You know, it always just stuck around with. It always stuck with me.
Wow, that was a funny one. I think, guys think of the, you remember they started the whole Batman Superman hour? And they had like, I guess the new Batman Adventures, I guess that's what they splintered it off to, like in 97 to 98. Because the first animated series lasted like 3 seasons, right?
Right. Because I was looking at, when I was buying the animated series, there's a very distinct art difference between seasons 1, 2, and 3, and then whatever happened in 4. I don't know if they got.
They had like 2 more seasons, and it went a whole completely different way, in which Bruce Wayne was looking a little more thin.
Yeah.
more debonair. I still like that series some, but you know, it didn't match up to the original to me.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I'm like, oh, well, you know, this is kind of, these are my memories, you know, seasons 1 through 3. And, you know, I'm kind of keeping those, you know, sheltered.
Well, do you guys watch any of the featured films with Batman?
Yes. Sorry, you jumped ahead. I can't think of the name of it now. It was.
With the Mask of the Phantasm one?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that recently on Netflix.
I mean, I didn't watch that one. What do you guys think of it? Or if I did, I don't remember it.
Yeah, same here.
I thought I liked it. I mean, it flashed back to Bruce Wayne, like when he was just getting started, and it showed where it basically had a love interest where he was about to, you know, he was going to give up being Batman, or he's going to give up fighting crime before he actually had the costume. I mean. And then all of a sudden, the love interest, you know, she left out of nowhere because her father was, you know, had money troubles or whatever, and with the mafia, I guess. I guess it was the mafia, yeah. And I mean, it just shows you that he could have not been Batman. I mean, it was very interesting.
That's good. The thing I liked about this series, and what sticks to me with the whole anime series, that for the time that it came out, you're talking about early 90s, right? This is almost 20, let's just say 20 years later, and this series still holds up.
Yeah.
Holds up a lot better than most of these anime series hold up. You can watch this series now and still, you wouldn't feel that it was dated.
Well, that's the thing.
Maybe the art style, but other than that, I mean, all these new cartoons that come out, they're not going to be remembered past 2-3 years from now. You have a couple of and this is definitely what considered a classic cartoon. I mean, it held up better than the movies, the original movies.
Yeah.
It probably will hold up better than the, you know, the much vaunted Dark Knight. You're going to look at this 10 years from now and still be like, this is still the definitive Batman, the animated series. And that's like, to me, that's the first time. Because as far as Batman's concerned, you're talking about they've had live-action TV series, a whole trilogy of movies. Listen, this is three movies or four movies the first time they did it.
I think it was three the first time. Two were Tim Burton's, and then one was somebody else.
Yeah, well...
Well, okay, the Tim Burton movies, yeah, the two Tim Burton movies, those were okay. Those were not bad.
They're okay, but they just don't hold up over time. Right. You watch it now, it's just like, oh, God, this was, you tell it was, excuse me, because it was done in the late 80s, early 90s.
But then, you know, once, you know, the Joel Schumacher came in, yeah, it just got silly.
Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. Oh my God!
I still gotta admit, I was a kid when I saw those. I loved them as a kid. I mean, just as a kid watching those, I mean, it was awesome. But I mean, now that you can see how horrible it was. I mean, I remember watching one of the Batman movies with. I mean, it was one with Robin, and Robin just goes, "Holy rusted metal, Batman!" And Batman's like, "What?" And he's like, "The metal." It has holes and it's rusted. I was like, "Are you serious? Did you just do that?"
But that's the thing with the whole Batman anime series. It holds up. A kid can watch it. Not I wouldn't say too young of a kid, but appropriate age, like early preteens to in any era can watch this and still say this was pretty good. Well written. That series never seemed cheesy, the cartoon. They had some episodes where they're kind of light, but it was never cheesy.
And it holds up today. I mean, you watch it today, it's still entertaining. I mean,
still, if you want to know, if I would tell anybody, if you want to know about Batman, watch this series.
Okay, I mean,
you learn about Batman, you learn about all of his enemies, and you pretty much get the gist of everything that's Batman.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Now, I got a question.
Oh, no, go ahead.
When The Dark Knight came out, they had that, like, short anime series, I guess. It was a couple episodes, Gotham Knights. Did anyone watch that?
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
Was that not horrible? I mean, it had Kevin Conroy in it, but it was just horrible. Oh. The animation was just bad.
I think a couple of the episodes were okay. But as a whole, it was bad. Yeah, it was bad as a whole. But a couple of them was okay. I could see the point they were going, but that won't hold up either. That was just something they threw out there just because Batman was just so hot at the time that they could, hey, we'll try the Japan animation.
Piggyback, off of The Dark Knight.
Yeah. I don't know. You could get an explanation on some things, but it wasn't what I think a lot of people expected it to be. I mean, I guess Kevin Conroy is the the saving grace of that.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I didn't too much. I was disappointed with it as a whole.
Now, I have a question. Have any of you seen Batman Beyond?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of that?
I loved it. I thought that show was. I was surprised that they only kept it around for, two seasons?
Three seasons. Looks here on eBay.
Three seasons? Well, okay. Yeah, I was surprised that it was only three seasons because it seemed like they were getting somewhere with it. I mean, it was like the beginning of these heroes going to be teenagers, but it was so smart how they did it. Future Batman with Bruce Wayne being old, see how he would still continue to fight crime.
Yeah. Actually, William, you just saw the... Return of the Joker, didn't you?
Yes, that was really good. I mean, it was so interesting.
Yeah, I love that everything about that animated movie because it has so many. It was really well written. They had some thought to it. He gave you a future, like even though you go and look at it, it's an alternate future. You don't know if that's the actual future it's going to take, but they show you the whole demise of the Joker and how. He was still brilliant enough to figure out how to keep himself going.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome.
The only thing is that the Robin that was in that one, I forget which one it is, the second Robin, whoever
Mm-hmm.
He was one that died, but he was also one in The Return of the Joker.
Well, the DC Universe, if you follow, he died, but they somehow they resurrected him. He ended up becoming a villain of Batman. So, I guess it depends on what universe you... I mean, you know how the comic book world goes. Just because you died in it don't mean you're going to stay dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many sorcerers and stuff. They could, I mean, I let that go because, like, if you... said he could have been the one that was brought back, and in that universe, obviously, he didn't die.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Robin, did any of y'all watch that, it was Teen Titans, I think?
Yeah, I did. I kind of liked it.
A little bit. It was funny. And that's not what my superhero cartoons are supposed to be, but it was cool. It wasn't nothing that you're going to remember 10 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of enjoyable. I mean, if you liked Robin, and they kind of made Robin a badass, though.
Yeah, it was more like for the kids. It definitely was a toned down kiddie version. Like, okay, well, it's like Muppet Babies. Muppets are definitely something for adults, but the Muppet Babies was definitely for kids. So
don't compare that to the Muppet Babies. The Muppet Babies hold a special place in my heart.
I can't remember, but I did used to watch that show a lot. So back with the Batman era, we guys were watching some of these movies over the weekend. I guess we could start off with the Superman, Batman, Public Enemies movie. I know Matt, you said you didn't see it, so hold.
That's
hold
okay.
Tight.
You can, no, don't worry about it. You can go ahead and talk.
All right. What did you guys think of the movie?
I really liked it. Yeah.
Did any of you guys read the comic book? It's the actual Batman Superman comic book. It's pretty much based off of it.
No, not at all.
I read it. Do you know anything about it, Matt, or not really?
No, I don't really. I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well, they started up a series, I guess, you know, the two most popular characters of the DC Universe. They started up a series about Superman and Batman, and pretty much in this series, Lex Luthor is promoted. Somehow it becomes president of the United States.
And that's what happened in the movie, too.
And pretty much the movie follows a lot of it, except for maybe some of the fight scenes and how they went down. But pretty much it had the whole gist of it. It's a pretty good adaptation of the comic book. And that's, I guess, the theme of what we've seen so far. That movie and Planet Hulk are pretty true to the comic book. But anyway, back to the Superman Batman thing. What do you think of Lex Luthor in this?
I mean, you know he was... you knew he didn't change. You knew he was still Lex Luthor. I mean, Superman had it right. He was like, it's Lex Luthor. You really... Yeah. I mean, you've seen all the things he'd done. I mean, this was just obviously another, you know, trick up his sleeve, another...
I never got how they... So, I mean, that's pretty much his character always. He was never complete. I mean, he was just power hungry. And
well, in this one, he was just insane.
He ended up becoming insane because he was giving himself those kryptonite treatments.
Yeah, injecting himself with kryptonite, like, you know, juicing himself up.
But, I mean, I did like, when I say stay pretty true to the story, I mean, pretty much the whole thing from them falling underground, working their way through the sewer. Batman being a badass. I mean,
I loved the dialogue in that sewer scene.
Yeah, he was like, now you can see my world.
Well, no, they're saying, like, you remember, you know, so and so villain? Yeah, whatever happened to her? She died. Oh, really?
Yeah. Why don't the good villains ever die?
Yeah, yeah. What's a good villain? Goes Clark. What's a good villain?
I love the part where Alfred, where they open that, where Superman opens the gate or whatever, and Alfred's holding a shotgun.
Yeah, Alfred's still a badass. But what about after that, the introduction of some heroes that I really don't, I'm not too familiar with, other than reading them in a little comic book. Captain Atom, Power Girl, and the hero that they never gave his name. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, the one that... Took me forever to figure out who Power Girl was. Like, I'm like, it might be Supergirl, But then it turned out I was right. It's the alternate universe of Supergirl.
Right, it's like an alternate Supergirl. And in the series, after the movie finishes, part of the whole kryptonite meteor thing, Supergirl is actually attached to the meteor or something like that. She's one of the fragments that crashes to the ground. Supergirl is like in that fragment, and it becomes a whole deeper plot. But backtrack to the movie. The fight scenes in this movie. What do you guys think of them?
I think they did it. I mean, brilliant. I mean, with the whole Lex Luthor putting $1 billion on Superman. I mean, bounty wise, and they had you know. They didn't have like the main villains, like they didn't have Joker or Mr. Freeze or.
Does anybody know who that group of the ice people were? Because
they looked like Mr. Freeze cronies. I don't know who they were, actually, but it seemed like they all were. It looked like two like different versions of Mr. Freeze from the comic book, because like they had one with the helmet, like and one with like that looked like a Flash as Mr. Freeze. I guess in the DC universe, they probably have a couple of Mr. Freezes. So, I'm not sure about that. But they were pretty badass. What did you guys think of Solomon Grundy's appearance?
It was just Grundy.
Grundy, right? Grundy?
Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was good that the fact that they even had Batman fighting him. Because he's really out of Batman. As a matter of fact, most of the people Batman was fighting were out of his league. And he was doing a better job of fighting them than Superman at times. What do you guys think?
I mean, that's what I've always liked about Batman. I mean, he's not made out as this, oh, I have superpowers, I'm awesome, I'm totally invincible, like Superman or Wonder Woman or anything. I mean, he's basically an average guy who, you know, just who has the money, who has the smart, and is just, you know, I mean, it seems more realistic to me than Superman or Wonder Woman.
So what did you guys think of the whole Metallo introduction and the Anak, that fight scene?
That brought back memories of the Superman cartoons. Metallo was like my favorite villain.
No, what was interesting to me is that when they were, you know, after they finished the first group of villains that came after them, it was like a who's who of villains in a circle that surrounded them. And they really made a point to bring back all of the people from, like, the Super Friends TV series.
Yeah.
I mean, they had, like, you know, I mean, I don't know what the hell. What was the name? Manta? Manta was out there trying to fight this guy. I'm like, what the hell is he going to do?
Yeah.
And then the Amazon girl.
Yeah, I was like, who the heck is that?
I remember those from the real Super Friends. Almost every villain that was in the Legion of Doom was out there, except for like Bizarro and Riddler and those guys. Like all the B-list villains from the Super Friends was out there. And it was funny to me because I was just betting my during the fight scene. Like, I bet you Superman won't punch this girl. I bet you she won't, because he always has a thing about. You know, he's always a good goody guy, right?
Yeah.
He finally took the gloves off. I was like, I don't care. And he finally punched. I was like, oh, awesome.
But, I mean, they had to do that. Going back to the B-villains, they had to do that. Because, I mean, like I said, you wouldn't have the Joker or Mr. They don't really care too much about money.
Right, exactly.
Right.
But Manta? think he's coming out the ocean to come, collect a $1 billion bounty. I guess I don't know his character too much anyway. So then my biggest fanboy moment of the movie, because I just did not know if they were going to introduce this. In the comic book, they had a really big showdown with Superman, Batman against Hawkman and Shazam. And when they showed up into the actual into the movie, I went crazy, because I never seen Shazam in anything other than those old stupid cartoons that they had back in the day. And I really they never talked. Not so recently, Hawkman has not shown up in any.
Oh, you mean Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
was like, Shazam. Captain Marvel. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I knew who you're talking about.
And they made a big deal in the comic book of showing that Superman and Batman during the fight with those guys switched off on the who they were fighting. Because for some reason, I guess in the DC universe, Superman has a hard time fighting against Captain Marvel because his power is magic based.
Right. Yeah. And they even made a point to say that in the movie.
Right, they made a point to say that in the movie, and I guess when they had showdowns before, Superman either has a hard time beating him or can't beat him. And I don't know, I guess it was easier for Superman to take out Hawkman. But in the comic book, they went into big detail. That like, the whole comic was just dedicated to that showdown. Where in this, they kind of just faded it to black and let you find out later on that, you know, they won.
Yeah, that never really was clear to me, like, if they won or if, you know, Captain Marvel
right.
and Hawkman, like, sided with them.
Nah, right, they beat them. Because in the comic book, I guess Batman uses some of his, you know, his gadgets to take Shazam down, or Captain Marvel. And Superman just too badass to take Hawkman down. But I guess Superman thought he was going to have easy time with Hawkman, and they made sure to point that out in the thing too. He thought he was gonna have an easy time, just take him to damn near out of space and let him choke and then bring him back down. And Hawkman was like, "Oh, me choke out, bitch! I will slap you with this
you with this mace,
with this mace or whatever." Because that mace is supposed, I guess, I don't know. You guys might know better. I mean, that mace is supposed to be pretty like mystical in its own right, so. I don't know. Anyway,
about
I thought it was pretty true to the comic, and I give it, you know, it was a pretty good watch. I don't think I really want to watch it too much again, but and the art style was a little too much for me though, because all those other heroes are like looking like Gears of War people. They're all super ripped and
yeah.
I don't know. I didn't like it too much. I mean, I did like looking at Power Girl a little bit.
Oh, and the Toy Man, that was just funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that,
as
got,
big as Power
Rock
Girls.
Yeah, I like Toy Man.
All right, well, let's talk. You guys watched Planet Hulk also, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You saw that one, Matt?
No, I did not see that.
Oh, okay.
Probably just because I'm not much of a Hulk fan.
I'm not either, but I just was in the comic book mood, you know?
Yeah, we started talking about it a little last week, and then I guess we went crazy a little this week. So, what you guys thought of a Planet Hulk?
I thought it was interesting. I mean, I'm not a big Hulk fan, so I don't know too much about, you know, the Hulk. But it seemed interesting. I mean, the thing I couldn't get about it was they were saying he was, you know, he was out of control. That's why they shipped him away. But, I mean, he seemed, you know...
Yeah,
all right.
He seemed pretty coherent in the...
I mean, talking, and he seemed kind of... I mean, until he started fighting, I mean, then...
What happened in the whole Planet Hulk series, at the beginning of the series, I guess, they don't really discuss... Hulk went on one of his rampages again, and it took a lot of the heroes to subdue him. And I guess the last time he went on a rampage, I guess, with a doctor... Doctor Strange, Mr. Fantastic, and Iron Man.
Yeah, that's who they show.
Came to the bright idea that, listen, this guy's too much of a danger to be on this planet. Next time he goes on a rampage, he might as well just kill us all. So what we're going to do, we're going to ship him out. We're going to send him to a planet where he could be by himself and be at peace, and our planet could be safe. So they deemed him, they got together, the powers that be deemed that he was a public enemy, and shipped him away. And then, you know, at the time they shouldn't wait, well, he was already calm. So it didn't make a difference, you know, they didn't show him rampaging everything. So he was calm at time, and he was kind of betrayed. They tricked him to send him out. Like, hey, we're gonna help you with your Hulk condition. You know, Bruce always wants to be helped. So he trusted these guys. So these guys, they betrayed his trust. So from the moment that they sent him away, he was so pissed because, you know, he can't believe that these guys that he trusted most would send him out. So as he's on this planet, he, you know, they pretty much go through the whole gladiator-esque type of thing where he's a gladiator, he fights through with everybody. And they did stray a little bit, but not too much from the comic.
Personally, that gladiator thing was just, it was just tiring. I mean, you've seen it in so many other type of, you know, oh, we go to another world, and oh, we're captured, and we're fighting in the Colosseum.
Forced to fight, right.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was kind of a down point of the comic series, but they wanted to, they didn't do too good a job showing how, I mean, all of a sudden, that main girl that was always standing up for the Red King, Sierra, that one girl that's like old strong or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, she ended up falling in love with the Hulk in the very end, but they didn't really flesh that out. And all of a sudden, well, since you saved us, I'll be with you.
I don't know if I like that.
Well, I mean, that's what happened in the comic, but they did a really bad job of doing that in the cartoon.
I understand that, but still, yeah, they did a really bad job of that.
Right, they more try to focus on the bond that he had with the other warriors.
Now, I don't understand why the Hulk was so coherent. Like, he could actually form really good sentences.
Oh well,
was that really explained in the comic?
Yeah, in the comic book, he's when he's not in a completely berserk rage, Bruce Banner was in control most of the time. So he was able to talk.
Okay. Because, every time I've seen the Hulk, he's...
But in most comics, I mean, it doesn't portray well in cartoons. Everybody rather just see him going at a straight rampage. But in a comic book, a lot of times he's coherent. Not only coherent, sometimes it was to advantage. He had Bruce Banner's intelligence, but the Hulk's strength. So, I don't know. That character's gone so many changes. What happened in the whole Planet Hulk thing is that he was supposed to get to this point of power that he was so enraged by everything that happened that he couldn't be stopped. And he formed his brotherhood, but he did it reluctantly. Then what happens, he gets with that lady in the end, and she gets pregnant by him and has a son. But the ship that the Doctor Strange and those guys sent the Hulk on exploded with her by it, and kills her.
That was one of the things that's why he's not in the Civil War. That was, one of the things that led up to it, right?
Well, actually, the Civil War happened, after World War Hulk, because the Hulk comes back. Hulk comes back to Earth after his wife dies.
Okay.
And he's at such an insane level of anger that he's pretty much unbeatable at this time. So he comes back to Earth and pretty much lays waste to everybody. But somehow he loses. Somehow something happens and he loses. But you know that series was actually a well written series, but it was just hard to portray in the book. I did like it. I mean, there was some action to it, but I don't know. It fell well short of the comic book to me.
Okay, can you tell me who that other guy was fighting beside Thor was?
Yeah, the Thor dude. Yeah. The horse face or whatever.
Yeah.
Beta Ray Bill. That's the name of that character. It's a character from the Thor universe, or I guess the actual Marvel universe. Matt, do you know anything about him?
No.
No, you don't know Beta Ray Bill?
No.
And it was, he pretty much, in one of the adventures, he ended up was able to lift up Thor's hammer. You know, only a few people have ever been able to lift up Thor's hammer. Thor, Captain America for some reason, and, I guess a future Thor. So this character, he first came up, he picked up he's like an alien. He picked up Thor's hammer, and instead of him reverting back to human or alien after he gave the hammer back, he ended up, I don't know if Odin decided to make him a Thor character. So, I don't know how they introduced him. I mean, he was captured in the Planet Hulk in the comic book, but they just did it different I like how they did it in the thing better. But he pretty much has every power as Thor, just not quite as powerful as Thor. But he was one of the few worthy people able to pick up his hammer. And I think he ended up fighting Thor, and they became They became, yeah, he fought Thor to a standstill, and Odin decided to give him his own hammer. His hammer's called Stormbreaker.
Yeah, because I really never got into the Thor. Like, I knew who Thor was, what he looked like, but that's it.
Yeah, same.
I guess Odin was thinking that, hey, listen, I can make another Thor, and you can help out other people, and Thor can stay here. Because, you know, Thor always wants to go to Earth, or wants to go to space and save people. So that's who he is. He's pretty much an alien version of Thor, created by the power of Odin, because somehow he was worthy. So that's who he was. Golly, you guys didn't know who he was. I guess you really were confused at that point.
Yeah. Well, I knew he was Thor related. I mean, because he talked about, yes, you know, the halls of, you know, whatever, and he's heard of Hulk, and
he's dressed like Hulk, like, yeah, Thor.
Yeah, and he put a pretty good whooping on him for a little while, didn't he?
Yeah.
But that's who that character was. All right, and you guys also saw the other Justice League movie, right?
Yeah, Justice League Crests on Two Earths.
Okay. I didn't watch that one. What you guys think of it?
I didn't like it.
It was okay. I've seen worse.
I mean, the animation was pretty weak. It just didn't look right, and the voice, none of the original voice actors. I mean, Superman was played by, you know, Mark Harmon, the guy who plays Special Agent Gibbs on NCIS.
Yeah, during the whole thing, I'm like, why is Gibbs Superman? Why is Gibbs Superman?
It was bizarre. And, I mean, Batman, of course, wasn't Kevin Conroy, or didn't really sound like Kevin Conroy at all.
Well, Batman was really barely in it. Until, like, the end.
Oh, God. I'll skip it.
Yes. Skip it.
The story of it, you know. Like, I just saw Turtles Forever, which was recommended by William. And it's basically the exact same storyline as Turtles Forever. Almost.
Yeah, I don't like getting into the whole alternate universe stuff unless I'm just going to believe that's the actual universe. So, I don't know.
Like the alternate universe of Batman was
Owlman.
I've actually seen Owlman in one of the TV series.
Same.
Yeah, so I've actually seen that particular universe before. So it wasn't quite new to me.
But funny enough, I was just looking at, you know, I've been watching Spider-Man lately and looking at the episode guides, and, I mean, the Spidey Wars was basically alternate, you know, alternate Spider-Mans and Peter Parkers. So, I mean, they were doing that story back in, you know, the 90s.
Yeah, everybody does that story once. I can't stand it. I told you guys last week, when Spider-Man started doing that, I was like, okay, bye, see you later.
Yeah, that's something that kind of, I know how the series went. I mean, like, when they said Mary Jane fell into a parallel dimension, you know, and then he's always trying to get her back, and then he never really has the love interest. I mean, it was always like, and then she came back as a clone or something.
Yeah, we talked about that.
But that wasn't the real clone. Okay. That wasn't the real Mary Jane. I mean, at the end of the series, he was supposed to, after the Spidey Wars and Secret Wars, Madame Web.
After he met Stan Lee.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh my God! Like I missed I don't know. It must have been like one of the last couple seasons or whatever.
It was the very last episode.
Okay, and like I missed when he meets Iron Man, Captain America, like basically the rest of the, you know, the Avengers.
You've got to look those up. Those are some good episodes.
And
I missed them.
You know what was a good one? If you want to see an animated movie that really represents most of those characters pretty well, the first Avengers movie. This is Avengers movie. I don't know if it's called Ultimate Avengers. Yeah, Ultimate Avengers, yes.
Ultimate Avengers? Okay, I have that on. I have a copy of that. I got to watch it.
The first one was good. The second one, not so much. The first one was really good. I think that first one was better than any of these ones that I've seen over the weekend. And it has a nice cast of characters and pretty good story. The story is a little hokey, but just the actual introduction of the characters and actual fights, top notch.
I'll have to watch that. I didn't know that they made an Avengers movie. I mean, until you said something.
Came out in 2006.
They'd have two Avengers movies, Iron Man, Doctor Strange.
We'll see that's it.
All those came out in that around that 2006 time.
That was crucial for me in high school. So, I mean, I really wasn't watching cartoons or reading comics then. So, that's probably why I didn't.
I forget you guys are, like, young. Yeah, I wasn't doing much at that time, raising a family. Not nothing much. Oh boy. Well, Matt, I wanted to talk to you about MLB The Show.
Yes.
I rented that last night, and I found it to be probably the most difficult sports game I've played ever.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But the most fun. Any tips you can give me on that? What do you think about the game? Did you play last year's version?
No, I didn't play last year's version. The last one I played was probably it had to have been 08. I played it on the PSP. And it translates very well onto the PSP, and I had a lot of fun doing that. I just don't think it took me a long time. I agree with you. This is a very difficult game to get the hang of, and you know, don't start on anything higher than rookie, you know, and you know, I you really can't learn it because the computer is really good. I don't know why. It's just a very difficult opponent to play, no matter what. You know, you're not going to be throwing. I don't know how you're going to end up throwing, you know, no hitters or perfect games in it, but it takes a while to get used to. I use, I guess, the meter system in the pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thankfully, it's nothing more than a button press to, you know, to throw to a base if a ball's batted in play.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I think it is the classic version of hitting. I don't think you have to use the right thumbstick to, you know, to swing or anything. But it is difficult. Online play is very laggy. I don't know if that's, you know, going to end up. I don't know if that's going to get corrected throughout, you know, throughout the life of the game.
It is on a PSN network, so I don't know. But I found hitting, like pitching, wasn't that bad because you do use the meter and you can just pretty much line up. Even though, I guess the more speed you put on, the harder it was to put it in the right spot, which is realistic, and I do love that. But you know, first time I got a strikeout, I was jumping out of my chair. Like, yeah, I got same as that first time I hit a home run. I was like,
yeah.
It's like, you know, those feelings are hard to get in a sports game in which you felt like you really accomplished something. But my whole thing with the batting is like when they do throw the ball over the plate, I mean the ball, it doesn't show you really where you really don't have to guess where it's going. So I always end up swinging a lot of balls sometimes because maybe it's something you have to learn, but you can't really see it. I don't know, graphically it just doesn't, the ball doesn't.
It's,
curved too late or something? I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but...
For me, I always kind of... I don't know, maybe it's just a very... Maybe it's the way to approach the game as a player. I don't know. They always say, you know, players always look off the fastball. So I use the default guessing system when batting, so I'll always try to guess fastball. And when you try to look at the other... When you look at the pitchers, you know, what they have in their repertoire... You know, if they're a three pitch relief pitcher and you're guessing fastball, you know, it makes it easier to guess what they're coming with. You know, it's either going to be a changeup or slider, or another, or you know, a two seam fastball, which will break a little bit back. But, it is very hard to, you know, I want to swing and I want to, you know, I want to get the game moving. I want to hit. I want to do those things.
Right. It's like hard to be patient, you know, but the
right.
One thing I say about that game is that definitely one thing I didn't want to ask you, with the power hitting, I know there's a separate button for hitting a power ball, but most of the time I swing with it, it doesn't even swing.
I don't know when maybe that comes on in veteran. Like, I've been playing on rookie right now, and I've just had one swing, and I've hit home runs off that. I think that
Maybe you're right. When I had it on veteran, it seemed like it was there. And then when I was guessing the pitch, I could push it to the left or the right, either way, guess which area the pitch was going. But it seemed like a rookie doesn't have that either.
No, it's kind of like it seems like more like the four corners of the strike zone will flash red when you've guessed the right pitch. But I don't know if it's granted, I'm always kind of just like looking right down the middle, and I know that's never going to happen. I kind of like try to put it in the area that it's going to be, where I guess the pitch is going to come. It's something, it takes a lot of getting used to, is really what it comes down to. Like, I had to play, several innings before I would get a hit. It felt bad.
But at the same time, as far as me, I'm not that much into baseball, but gee, at the end of the game, I felt like I was in a real baseball game. I appreciated the fact that the AI was good enough that I didn't really feel the need to hop online and get a good competition.
Right.
It's like, and if I played a team that's really good, which I haven't done yet because I don't want to get killed. But, if I play a team that's really good, and, it really emulated, like when I play with the Marlins, because that's the only team I know a little bit. And okay. I know that Hanley Ramirez is their best hitter, and I know that I pretty much know a couple of the middle hitters that can hit pretty good. So I was able to, I didn't try to go for everything with the pitcher, and especially with the one thing with the pitching, though, it seemed like, I guess maybe on rookie, the pitcher can go for a while.
Yeah.
I kind of wish the pitcher was fatigued a little bit more sooner so you would be forced to use a middle relief. But
right.
But other than that, man, I don't even, as I say, I'm not even into baseball, but I'm thinking about purchasing this game because it's that much of a good simulation. It makes me appreciate baseball a lot more.
And well, that's good.
I can say that about Madden or NBA. It's fun, but only they're fun to me because I'm so into NFL and basketball. But baseball, I'm not into it like that, but I could get a lot more into it just off this game. That's saying a lot.
Well, that's good. I think that is very much a credit to the developing team that they have.
Hey guys, you have anything else you guys want to talk about?
Nope. I think that's it.
I think the whole reason why Stuart and I were quiet is, for me, I'm not a big baseball fan, so.
I just figured since I had Matt here, I'd ask him about it. Maybe I catch up with him online. I heard Vic Joe want to play me, too, so.
Well, yeah, I'll be happy to. It'll be laggy.
Give me some more points. Yeah, maybe next week. Let them fix some stuff up.
Yeah.
So I guess after that big how do we go a whole show and not talk about what happened with Sony this week?
Oh yeah, the leap year glitch. The calendar.
You had a problem with that, didn't you, Mark?
Oh yeah. I had a real big problem. I thought I was good because I had a slim, so it didn't affect me. I was able to play my game still during the 24-hour outage that Sony had. But the day after, I went to play Heavy Rain, and I guess it corrupted my file, and I erased my whole Heavy Rain file. I was maybe 3/4 of the way done with Heavy Rain, so I had to start over from the beginning.
Oh, that sucks.
And I wasn't happy to have to do a full playthrough without completing the game again, so... But I powered through it. I got done with it. It was worth it. But we won't talk about Heavy Rain. Great game. You guys all should try it.
I would love to.
Great experience. But yeah, I mean, Zune had a problem with that maybe 2 years ago, where they had like a leap year bug or something like that.
And yeah.
All the Zunes were bricked for like a day.
The 30 gigs were, they weren't working at all.
All the fanboys were out there saying, "Oh, Sony, aha, this is your red ring." I'm like, no, this is not their red ring. They had a clock error. It was unfortunate. It was bad that you couldn't play your single player games when this was going on. I don't understand why that how that would affect it. But
well, the problem was it did self correct because even ones that were not on the PSN had this problem, and they did fix themselves.
Right. So, I mean, the fact, yeah, it did self-correct, and, you know, it was a inconvenience, but people on Xbox Live, I remember maybe a year or maybe 2 years, was it 2 years ago, two Christmases ago, Xbox Live was down for like a day and a half, 2 days.
And it was down for like an entire Christmas break for a lot of people.
It was down for a while, and, you know, Xbox, I guess. I don't like using those terms too much, but there was protest that Xbox Live was so good. We paid for that service. It was gone for, a lot of people for like up to 5 days.
Well, I think Microsoft gave a free game or something.
Oh, no, yeah, they gave a game, Undertow. That was a piece of crap.
It was.
You want to give me a game? You want to give me Undertow? No, give me a month off. Give me $5 off, something.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it was gone for a week. That was much more of a problem than this thing. It wasn't like Sony was overpopulated with people and it crashed the system. No. It was they had an internal clock problem.
Yeah.
The Xbox, their servers weren't up to snuff for a holiday season. And over the holiday break, a lot of people don't have time like we do to play. That might have been the only time to really play these games that they just got.
Right.
So
I just find it funny that, I mean, the clocks went back to 1999. I mean, I thought we were done with Y2K, really.
Yeah, that was a big goof, but, you know, wasn't that bad. I mean, I had a problem. I'm sure other people had some other problems with corrupt files and stuff, but in the big scheme of things, my console still works. I'm still able to get online, get over it. Even though I bitched on Twitter for about 12 hours straight.
So did everybody.
But, you know, I got out my system. All right, guys, well.
I think that was just, I mean, that people were like, oh, my PS3, I never use it. You know, it's collecting dust. It's just a Blu-ray machine. Well, that really made you think, oh, I really do use the PS3.
The interesting thing is that maybe a month ago, people wouldn't have noticed, but lately, PS3 has been getting so many games out of that are exclusive, even that it was a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, people wanted to play Heavy Rain and finish the Heavy Rain and couldn't even play that, so it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was a big deal, Sony should be happy because last year this time it wouldn't even been a big deal. A lot of people didn't even know.
Right.
Guys, have anything else to add?
No, I think we're good. We're running about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Matt, thanks for coming on. Pretty much our episode number one.
Yeah. Our very first guest. Yes, thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
It helped the conversation flow. And I guess we'll see you next week.